Welcome to The Unofficial Transcript. I'm David Koch. This series of radio reports will focus on key issues concerning Canadian students, especially in the province of Quebec. These reports will also attempt to examine how well major student organizations are responding to students' concerns. In this episode, disappearing bursary money, military research at McGill University, and the fight against rising tuition. You can download these reports at unofficialtranscript.wordpress.com and at mediacoop.ca, along with photos and other materials. These reports are made possible with financial support from the Quebec branch of the Canadian Federation of Students. Hundreds of students from colleges and universities across the province of Quebec gathered in Montreal on March 11th demanding that Minister of Education Michelle Korchesne invest $35 million of money from the federal government into bursaries for students. The $35 million figure comes from this calculation. Start with $80 million. That's the amount of money that the federal government provided annually to Quebec through the Canada Millennium Scholarship Foundation, and that foundation reached the end of its mandate and dissolved in January. Next, take $115 million. That's how much Ottawa announced it will be providing to Quebec through so-called alternative payments in 2011. So what's an alternative payment? Well, it's the sum of money that the federal government provides to the governments of Nunavut, the Northwest Territories, and the province of Quebec. Since these three governments operate their own student financial aid programs, they don't receive money through the Canada Student Loans Program or the new Student Grants Program, which the Fed set up in 2009. And since they don't receive money from those programs, Ottawa provides them with these alternative payments for their own student financial assistance programs. This year, the federal government announced that as part of its annual alternative payments for the 2009-2010 school year, Quebec will receive approximately $115 million. In a statement, the Fed said, quote, "This payment provides more money in support of Quebec student financial assistance programs as it surpasses the previous annual payment of $80 million under the Canada Millennium Scholarship Foundation." So that's $35 million more than before. And student leaders say that money is badly needed by students who rely on bursaries to sustain their education. Jean Clégoire is president of the Fédération des étudiants universitaires de Québec, also known as the FUC. This lobby group includes student associations from 15 universities across Quebec, with a membership of about 120,000 students.
C'est 35 millions que peut-être le ministère des Finances se mettait en poche pour combler le déficit qui est dû à des baisses d'impôts faites en 2000.
He says that's $35 million that perhaps the Minister of Finance is putting in his pockets to pay for a deficit that is the result of tax cuts made in the year 2000.
On ne fera pas les frais de l'irresponsabilité du gouvernement. Cet argent-là, on en a besoin.
We are not paying the price of the government's irresponsibility. We need that money, he says. Grégoire said that students are currently dealing with a shortage in financial aid that is making education inaccessible.
On calcule également ce qu'un étudiant a besoin pour vivre, donc son logement, on calcule son habillement, on calcule sa nourriture. Ces dépenses-là, il y a un manque à gagner de 70 millions de dollars actuellement dans l'aide financière. On a 35 nouveaux millions, on pourrait les investir là-dedans, ce serait déjà un bon pas en avant.
He says, we calculate what students need to live. We calculate the costs of housing, clothes, and food. And based on that amount, we currently have a shortfall of $70 million in financial aid for students. The $35 million could be invested in bursaries, and that would already be a good step forward, he says. The March 11th rally was organized by the FUC along with the FEC, that's the Fédération étudiante collégiale de Québec, which represents college students. Organizers estimated that about 1,500 people were in the streets of Montreal for the march, which zigzagged across the city to the office of the Minister of Education. To support the demonstration, 11 student associations voted to strike, leaving their classrooms behind as they converge on Montreal from all over the province of Quebec. Normand Chaltier-Prébeau studies at the Cégep of Abitibi-Témiscaming, an 8-hour bus ride from Montreal. I spoke to him after the rally.
Parce que même si moi, personnellement, je n'ai pas besoin de prêts et bourses, je vois quand même mes confrères, mes consoeurs qui souffrent de voir leur argent, leurs ressources monétaires réduites à chaque session. Donc, les prix des logis sont très élevés et le coût de la vie ne cesse d'augmenter aussi. Donc, c'est vraiment monstrueux de nous enlever de l'argent ainsi.
He says, even if I don't need bursaries and loans, my colleagues are suffering from having their financial resources reduced each term. The cost of housing is very high, and costs of living in general are going up as well. so it's really monstrous for the government to take our money this way, he says. Playbo added that he came to the protest to represent his fellow students who are unable to access adequate financial aid.
Oui, ce sont des amis précieux à moi qui sont vraiment très stressés, qui savent même pas s'ils pourront finir leurs études. C'est très difficile. C'est en plus les coûts d'études vont augmenter encore plus. Ça n'a juste aucun bon sens. Donc, je suis ici pour défendre ceux qui en ont besoin.
He says those are dear friends of mine who are really stressed, who don't even know how they will be able to finish their studies. It's very difficult. And it's also the fact that prices are going to increase even more. So I'm here to defend those who are in need. I asked Jean Gregoire about the next steps in the campaign. He told me that the FOC is awaiting the release of the provincial budget, which the finance minister said he will be delivering on March 30th.
Je pense qu'au budget, on va savoir, au budget du Québec, on va savoir si cet argent-là, ou si on a été entendu, si cet argent-là va être investi en bourse. Et si c'est pas le cas, il va falloir que les étudiants se mobilisent davantage pour faire passer leur message.
Gregoire says, with the Quebec budget, we will know if that money will be invested into bursaries. And if that's not the case, it will be necessary for students to mobilize in greater numbers to make their message heard. Gregoire also said that the protesters had received support from two major labor organizations, the CSN and the CSQ. Demilitarize McGill is a group of students and non-students concerned about the way that McGill University participates in the development of weapons that are literally used to kill people around the world. They have been campaigning in recent months for McGill to implement reforms to its research policy in order to make this kind of research more transparent. However, at the last meeting of Senate on March 24th, a new policy on the conduct of research was adopted that doesn't even mention military research. In fact, the new policy leaves out a clause that previously required McGill researchers to disclose whether or not they were engaged in military research. For more on the story, I spoke to Rebecca Dooley, Vice President of University Affairs for the Student Society of McGill University, or SMU. Dooley, who also sits on the Academic Policy and Planning Committee of McGill Senate, has been working with members of Demilitarize McGill to advocate for research policy reforms.
When the research policies sort of came up for review and the university decided to put a new policy forward, in the new policy draft that we saw, they had removed most specifically a clause relating to military research at McGill. This clause required researchers who were receiving military funding to check a box and sort of announce to the appropriate funding offices at the university that they were doing military research. This clause was removed, and there were a few other issues with the policy that we identified. Right off the bat, most specifically a clause that would allow for donors to remain anonymous. So what we were really concerned about from the get-go was that we were having the most transparent policy possible. And that we were considering as an institution, our social responsibility with relation to the research that we were conducting.
On March 24th, the McGill Senate met and adopted the new research policy. Cleve Higgins, a member of Demilitarize McGill and a recent graduate, said that the new policy is a big step backwards.
I mean, I guess it really is the McGill administration completely giving up any role that it has in ethical questions regarding the harmful applications of the research that's done at the university. And that's taking, it's a regressive position going back more than 20 years to before the opposition to military research in the 1980s and when those reforms were initiated for kind of tracking military research. And it takes the university back to before that time when students were and faculty were raising these issues the first time around. So we're going to keep raising the issue of military research and the ethical applications that it has, implications that it has, but we're not going to expect it. It's no longer something that we can take through formal university policy and procedures. That's not the routes that are open to us anymore, so it's going to have to be more of a direct opposition to the research and whatever kind of creative forms we can find.
But Rebecca Dooley says that the new policy does provide some mechanisms for transparency and against research that has harmful applications to society.
One positive thing coming out of this, or, you know, we try and look for the silver lining, is that, I mean, we are in a position where you can know who researchers at McGill are receiving their funding from, and anybody who wants to do that research or wants to find that out can find that out.
And that's because the clause about anonymous donors being allowed was removed.
Yes, that would be one of the reasons for that. And if anybody does feel that they can demonstrate that somebody's research is being conducted in a way that does have harmful applications to society, as is stated in the preamble, there are, you know, methods for recourse through regular disciplinary or other channels within the university.
Members of Demilitarize McGill might be able to make a pretty good case that some research that goes on at the university, like the development of deadly thermobaric explosives, has applications that are indeed harmful. Here again is Cleve Higgins. He's speaking on a panel called Rethinking Research at McGill, explaining thermobaric technology and the McGill connection.
So the thermobaric research is, and fuel air explosives before it, is a type of weapon that creates an explosion that doesn't kill people through shrapnel, as normal explosives do. It kills people through a shockwave. And the shockwave creates intense heat and pressure, and that's the name of the research group at McGill is the shockwave physics group. And thermobaric explosives is thermo heat and baric pressure. If you type thermobaric weapons in Google, the Wikipedia page comes up, and the researchers at McGill are cited in the Wikipedia page. Like they're kind of important in this area. And the way that the weapon, the shockwave, kills people, the heat and the pressure kind of directly, if the rate underneath the explosion, but specifically for the US military, they got interested in these weapons again with the invasion of Afghanistan because there were gonna be people in tunnels. And the shockwave can travel into the tunnel and kill people deep inside of it because it will go around corners, it bounces around, it's not like shrapnel that just has an A to B line of sight direction. And also there's asphyxiation effects where it's actually the air itself that's being detonated and ignited, and therefore all the oxygen from the air from the surrounding area gets sucked up for that explosion, and so anybody who's in that area can't breathe. And it's also inside buildings, the shockwave will knock out the walls of the buildings.
Opponents to the reforms proposed by Demilitarize McGill have argued that the research in question has non-military applications that are beneficial to society. Rebecca Dooley explains.
Well, I think the problem that we usually face when discussing military research is that at the university, people will often say, well, not all military research is bad. Not all military research has harmful applications. Sometimes thermobaric weapons can be used for other things that, the thermobaric explosive can be used for non-weapon like purposes, but I mean the problem is by saying that you're trying to ignore the fact that there are harmful applications to those weapons.
Dooley also noted that there isn't consensus at McGill about whether military research is something that is basically harmful, and then there's the question of academic freedom.
Academic freedom has been a big discussion. Not only on this campus we're finding, but with the whole Ann Coulter thing in Ottawa, it's actually something that is popping up everywhere around North America. And there's a big concern that, we should have this unregulated academic freedom and that universities are the space for that. But this is really just my personal opinion is that academic freedom has its limits, especially when, you're in an organization that identifies itself as socially responsible, as, or as an equitable organization or anything like that. You have to really take into account the effects of what it is that you're creating, have on society.
Up to this point, student activists from Demilitarize McGill have been using democratic institutions to voice their opposition to military research on campus. At a general assembly in February 2009, students approved a motion which gave the Student Society a mandate to oppose McGill's involvement in the development of thermobaric weapons. But with the recent passage of the new research guidelines by Senate, members of Demilitarize McGill seem to be getting fed up with working through the system. In a statement released on March 22nd, they said, quote, "We urge other groups to avoid wasting their time in policy proceedings that themselves are neither transparent nor representative, and instead engage in creative direct action," end quote. This recalls the steps taken by activists in 1987. That's when community members occupied administration offices at McGill to protest military research. McGill implemented the policy requiring research to disclose whether they were doing military research following these occupations. I asked Higgins whether we should expect to see more sit-ins against military research at McGill.
I mean, the way it happened in the 1980s was that there was a campaign going on that was going through various channels negotiating with the administration, and then people who weren't even associated with that but knew about the issue went and occupied the offices, and it was actually a point of contention between the different parts of the movement at that time about whether they should have done that. But these kind of things don't necessarily happen in the expected sorts of ways, and it's hard to predict what will happen. But I think we want people to know that we've attempted to go through this route that is kind of prescribed by the university's structure and the ways that things should work procedurally, and that that didn't work, and that the administration has been very clear about, especially the top administrators, the principal, the provost, have been very clear that this is not something that they are going to allowed to happen through university regulations, and so the people who care about it are going to have to go through other means.
Here's Rebecca Dooley's response to Demilitarize McGill's call for direct action.
I personally feel that there is always a space within the proper governance or administrative structures of the university to advocate for these positions. It's not easy. You do not always get exactly what you wanted or what you hoped for. I do think that I don't regret going through the policy process. I don't regret being a student representative and advocating for these things, because we did get some concrete changes made, and we did start some very important discussions, and we did garner support from other members of Senate who were not students. Not all of the student senators were even 100% behind it, but it's one of those things where I think that to some extent you need both, the local level organization of, students and members of the community speaking up in sort of a direct action capacity. I think that I would not recommend people occupying administrative offices.
As long as military-funded research continues at McGill, this is sure to remain an explosive topic. Up next on the show, we hear from two student leaders about the fight against rising tuition in Quebec. Students are preparing to assemble en masse on April 1st in Montreal for a demonstration against heightened user fees, including tuition, and against the privatization of public services. This comes following indications by Quebec's Minister of Education, Michel Courchesne, that tuition rates will soon rise for Quebec students. In an interview with La Presse, Courchesne said that a consensus is emerging in favor of a tuition defreeze in Quebec. She said, quote, "When I speak of consensus, I exclude students." Christian Pepin is the coordinating secretary of ASSE. That's the Association pour une solidarité syndicale étudiante, which brings together about 40,000 students from university and college associations from schools across Quebec. I asked him for his response to the minister's comments.
Well, first of all, the fact that she's saying that it includes students is already a frontal attack, since we are the first concerned about this situation. We see more and more students being financially affected by cuts, like you said before, that since 2007, there's already a raise in tuition fees that will exclude probably around 6,000 to 13,000 students, according to a study commanded by the government itself. So, and if we go towards the the regulation of tuition fees, we will live pretty much the same situation that exists right now across Canada and the U.S., where more and more students had to just quit the benches of universities. For example, in the University of Western Ontario, there's been a decrease of more than 20% of inscriptions in the medicine faculties from students coming from popular classes, where more and more the upper classes are frequenting medicine faculties, engineering, and all other programs like that, like this, where the programs that had lesser costs were pretty much only frequented by the lower classes. And the other problem is that we are wondering, where is Michelle Courchesne talking about consensus? Is she talking only about her friends in the business field? Because as we see, since January, there's been a coalition opposed to the increase or instauration of user fees and privatization of public services, where at the moment we're talking about almost 100 organizations coming from the student movement, the workers' movement, the feminist movement, and community organization. So as we see, it's not only the students that are not in favor of this measure, but a large specter of organization across all Quebec society.
Now, if the consensus doesn't include students and doesn't include these various groups that you mentioned in this coalition, where's the pressure for higher tuition coming from?
We see that this proposition of deregulation is pretty much located in this project of pretty much adapting our universities and CEGEPs to this new globalized economy. And for us, this is pretty much alarming, as we see already pressure is more and more made. And if we go towards this direction, we are going to lose one of our last critical institutions for reflecting our past, present, and future. And university has been founded since the Middle Ages to have this critical distance, to be able to criticize a number of fields concerning society. And we think that it is more and more important in this period of economic crisis and ecological crisis to maintain and to preserve this the autonomy and the free economic and scientific research to be able to maintain this critical distance and the formation of the critical judgment. So, of course, it is presented also that education is pretty much something that serves personal investment to increase personal revenue. And as we see, this is a rupture with our conception of education as a common good that serves pretty much a formation to critical judgment, mainly the participation to public affairs. So for us, if we see education as a common good, as something that the benefits concerns all our collectivity, we think that it must be financed by all our collectivity and not increase the pressure on the students' shoulders.
I also spoke to the Vice President of External Affairs of the Student Society of McGill University, Sebastian Ronderos Morgan. Here's his take on the minister's comments.
It obviously shows that she's not representing the interests of those who are under her mandate as Minister of Education, those being the students. She seems to be more interested in the opinions that are being brought to the government by perhaps the economic elite or what have you, which seem to be proposing that tuition increases are the elixir to the underfunding crisis in the universities. Unfortunately, there's a lot of evidence to suggest to the contrary, and what's more is that we know that as tuition increases, accessibility to post-secondary education becomes more difficult for low-income students. This is something that, in fact, was proven by some research that was conducted by the ministry itself following the 2007 defreeze. So this is evidence that has come from the horse's mouth. I think in regards to her comment, like I said, it's very disappointing, but it also made it quite clear whose interests she was defending and whose interests she was not defending.
student leaders fighting tuition hikes are coming up against high-profile opponents. Former Premier Lucien Bouchard recently signed a so-called pact with other public figures, including former student leaders, former finance ministers, and a former head of the Montreal Chamber of Commerce. They have proposed a system that would get more money for post-secondary education from students in a sliding scale where tuition fees are based on what students are expected to earn with their degrees. Students in medicine, for example, could see an increase of tuition on the order of $10,000 per year over the course of 3 years, while social work students could see increases of $2,000 per year. I asked Ronderos Morgan for his response to the system.
So in regards to the proposal of the pact for the competitive funding of universities, of Quebec universities, it's very troublesome. This model exists elsewhere to varying degrees. In terms of international student tuition, it already is in place at McGill, in Quebec. For example, some faculties have been provided with the opportunity of deregulating their international tuition, and those faculties being, of course, the faculties that have programs which are assumed to be higher earning at the end of the line. I think it's a very worrisome logic. That fundamentally, it presupposes that the worth or the value of the degree is in its economic dividend at the end of the line. I think that makes assumptions on what the course of action of the individual student will be after they complete their degree. For example, there are students who enroll in Masters of Business Administration programs who, in fact, are not interested in going into business administration, but rather nonprofit administration. As you can probably imagine, the economic dividends for that are much less than in the business sector. So it not only presupposes where they're going to go and where their career is going to take them, but it also pressures graduates into pursuing the more lucrative careers, which is unfortunate, again, on a societal level, because it squeezes these highly educated individuals in coming from professional programs, which are usually the programs that have which are the programs by and large that the pact is proposing that the tuition is increased in. It essentially pressures the graduates of these professional programs to pursue the more lucrative routes, which I think is ultimately not to the benefit of society for the reasons that I mentioned. Secondly, it also assumes that it also limits or alters the accessibility to these programs for students who are coming from lower income backgrounds. There is an incredible dissuasive factor involved in tuition costs. Students might not know that they could be eligible, that they could potentially be eligible and potentially receive a bursary or a scholarship if they're low income when they initially look at the program that they'd like to enter into. So there's a point at which the decision to enroll into post-secondary education has to be made by a student who is low income, and the matching up of the economic incentives that would not be provided to all low-income students is not readily evident to the student who is about to enroll.
And while the Sherry government seems intent on raising tuition fees, student lobby groups are calling for the elimination of all barriers to education, with ASSE advocating for the complete removal of tuition fees. Here again is Pepe.
Well, for us, we don't need to go really back to see that this is not a new idea. It has been proposed by the Liberal government in the 1960s by government Lesage. Of course, with the rise of neoliberalism, all these conceptions of public services as common goods have been seriously put under attack. But for us, it is important to preserve these ideals that made the democratizations of education in Quebec and elsewhere, and we need to recall that Quebec has ratified, like Canada, what we call the International Pact on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights, where governments were engaged to abolish all obstacles to the right of education, and it was clearly written to go progressively towards free education, so the abolition of all fees. So for us, it is not a new idea. It is not we're not the only organizations calling about that, but is it utopian? If we'd say utopian in talking about being able to imagine another way of organizing society, well, it is truly utopian in this sense. We should reinvent and rethink the ways that our public services should be organized and being accessible for everyone.
Both ASSE and SMU are part of a coalition against user fees and against the privatization of public services. This coalition now includes upwards of 100 groups from Quebec civil society. They will be holding a demonstration on April 1st, starting at 1 p.m. at Phillips Square in downtown Montreal. That's 1 p.m. on Thursday, April 1st, on the corner of St. Catherine and Union at Metro McGill. You've been listening to Unofficial Transcript Radio. Check unofficialtranscript.wordpress.com for more information. I'm David Koch. Music in this broadcast include the song Radio Nowhere by Ethnomite Pux. The song is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 2.5. Thank you.